The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
Hi, this is Ben Wright Human, author of the webcomics Cost Pain and the Letters of the Devil, and you are listening to the PVD Cast.
Ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your humble host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 266. I hope all is well with you, and I appreciate the fact that you're checking out this episode. On this episode, I have two gentlemen that have created a very unique comic. Jay Kalagayan and Dylan Spieg join me to talk about Mest. This comic takes place in the sewers, and it follows a sewer worker by the name of Lilliput and the adventures that she has while she's down below, so to speak. And many of you that are longtime listeners of the PVD Cast may recognize the name Jay Kalagayan. As a matter of fact, he was on episode number 231 in April talking about the first two installments of Mest. And I gotta be honest, I even comment in our conversation that I thought it had been even longer than just April. It's amazing how COVID-19 time works, so to speak. But Jay was on to talk about those two installments, but there's a third installment now. And so I was very happy to have Jay and finally Dylan join us to talk about this great tale. It's got everything you can imagine. It's got unique characters. It's got monsters from down below, crocodiles, red tape, bureaucracy. It's got it all. So you definitely want to check out our conversation about Mest. And speaking of comics, I probably ought to let you know that this episode is brought to you by the fine folks at World's Greatest Comics. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. And they have tons of comics from every era. I'm talking from the gold to the modern, man. But they also have graphic novels, toys, comic book supplies, collectibles, back issues. Basically, they got everything you need for your fandom right in the store. Now, if you're not in Central Ohio, maybe you're like Dylan and Jay, you're down in the Cincinnati area, and you're like, I'm not coming up to Columbus, man. Well, that's cool. You can check them out online. They have a great website, wgcomics.com. And they're even very active on Facebook. Just look for at WG Comics. And no matter how you check out the store, you interact with the fine folks over there, please let them know that you heard about the store from me, John Orlando, right here on the PVD Cast. With that being said, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. Ladies and gentlemen, on the other side of the break, you're going to hear my conversation with Jay Kalagayan and Dylan Spieg talking about their comic Mess. Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to introduce my guest for this episode of the PVD Cast. They are the gentlemen behind Mest Comics. Jay Kalagayan, how you doing?
Good, I'm great.
And Dylan Spieg, how are you, sir?
I am great.
You know, Jay, I thought it was much, much, much more in the past. I was shocked to see that we talked in April. I, for some odd reason, was thinking it was much further back in our timeline.
COVID time is reverse dog years. I don't know. Like, how does that work? I don't know, but it felt like years ago and it was only April.
I know. That's true. I was really like, I can't believe it was April, but nonetheless, glad you guys are back. How are things? Because you're both in the Cincinnati area, correct?
Yeah. Yes. Pretty good. I'm a lot busier than I thought I would be with like art and drawing. So I'm really kind of blown away by that. So I'm glad I have a lot of hooks in the water though. So I'm always got like 20 different bosses that I got to, you know, respond to at any given time, but it's pretty good.
Dylan is living the dream. He's a working artist.
Yeah,
oh, that's good stuff.
It is. It's like being a thoroughbred, huh?
Jay, how are things in your neck of the woods? Also in the Cincinnati area, everything good?
Yeah, everything's great. Everything's great. Family, kids are headed back to school, and we're just trying to. And when I say headed back, probably virtual. So we are making good use of the house. We are. We paid for it. We invested in a house, and we are using the heck out of it.
All right. Well, guys, let's talk a little bit about Messed Comics from the beginning, because you have season 3, which just came out about 3-4 weeks ago. But let's talk about the beginning for those folks that haven't gotten a chance to go back in the archives and listen to the conversation that you and I had, Jay. So let's just start off real quick. That mess is pretty much following one particular sewer worker who is working in the sewers to make sure that everything runs smoothly, but then has some amazing adventures. Is that probably the best synopsis that I could give?
I think that's great. Yeah, Mest is the nickname for the Metropolitan Sewer District. And that sewer worker you're talking about, that's Lilliput. And she's kind of our tour guide to the weird, wild, wet world beneath our feet.
Dylan, my question for you is, when you're creating this Mest universe, was it incredibly challenging because it's a lot of subterranean settings and lots of odd things that are happening to Lilliput and whatnot? So was it challenging to do it than, say, another type of comic?
Yeah, no, I looked at all these cool old pictures of sewer systems from, like, Paris and London. They were real old, so it's all these curved brick tunnels that are super hard to draw and very time consuming. And so when we went to the Cincinnati one, and I saw that all of it's on like, it's all just smooth, like poured concrete pipes, and really, I was like, oh, I should have just started drawing it that way. But it's a more interesting look with the old bricks and stuff like that. But it's just like, that's the most time consuming part of it. And then Jay's got it pretty mapped out, and he kind of knows what he wants it to kind of look like. So it was difficult, but at the same time, he references a lot of scientific stuff that already exists. So you just got to draw it bigger or scarier, more complex. So I've had a good time. I mean, he even had a sketch for what he wanted the main character Lilliput to look like. So I didn't really have to do that kind of work. It's more just the, kind of figuring out what what Jay exactly wants and stuff like that. Is more, it's easier now because we've drawn it, so we kind of know what the world looks like. Mm-hmm. At the beginning, I was kind of like, oh, I don't know how that's going to look. But now it's a lot easier.
Well, one of the cool things that you brought to it was the use of live models, character models. So you were, what is the right word, stalking? You like stalked a V?
No. No. I mean, I knew who she was because she worked at the Stop and Go up at the street. So, but I was just going around asking different people if they wanted to model for it. And somebody said, you should ask my friend V. I was like, oh, I know her. So I actually asked her, but I looked up how does Marvel do it, and they just hire like a model who kind of looks like the whatever the character is, and they take a bunch of pictures too. So I was just, I'm a big believer in just find out what the people who are successful are doing and see if that can help you instead of working super hard. I could do it without looking at the models, but then it kind of end up looking kind of like manga-ish. Like you can tell, like the manga guys, they got like a real formula for like the face looks like this, and which is great because they're churning them out really quick. But if we wanted a specific look, I thought it's easier to just work with some models.
Well, Dylan, if I can ask, what is your background in art? What style of art are you proficient at? What, you know, how did you get involved in art? Kind of just give us the
core. I went to school for it. And for most of the time, I've done most just painting portraits. And then I do some storyboarding, which is for like TV commercials and stuff like that. And sometimes music videos where I get together with the director of something. And we basically make a comic book for whatever the commercial is going to be. I have to sign a lot of NDA like things saying I won't disclose what this is, which is funny because I was like, I don't know why anybody cares. But yeah, wait, you know, I mean,
when we were first getting together, you were doing something for the Sci-Fi Channel, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. I'd done a little bit of more, that's more. They would just say draw 100 women warriors. That's kind of like the Mad Max style. Or so I was doing some concept work. I don't really love that as much because a lot of times I would work on stuff that was never, ever made. So I was like, it's kind of, I mean, it pays okay. But I like storyboarding more because you get to see the commercial on TV, you know, and it's pretty fun. And it also makes you really fast. But I also do, I mean, I get a lot of portrait work and I do a lot of stuff sometimes pinup girls, like pinup models, will have me do a pinup like illustration of them, and then what I do is then they sell it, and then I kind of like sell it through them. So I do that kind of stuff too. I whatever it takes, as long as I'm drawing something. I do like photography too, so I try to do all sorts of stuff.
What's nice is the connections, the different models that he's worked up with the pinups and everything like that. You've incorporated into into characters in Mest.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, you know, sometimes it's funny because Mest isn't really very sexy, so they're usually like, so do I got to dress kind of sexy for this? I was like, nope, no sexiness at all. Not at all. I'm going to make you look terrible. So that's kind of fun. I mean, they don't really seem to mind it either. So I like that part about it in that aspect.
Because I'm sure some of them are like, okay, yeah, so this guy wants to draw me. I bet I'm going to have to get half naked. Wait, what? I don't, what? Wear sweatpants?
No, you put more clothes on. The suit usually fits on over top of their clothes that they already have on. That's how bulky and not flattering it is. Which is great. I mean, because I was like, what do I care? I was like, it makes it easier for me. I'd rather have that than have some sort of weird, creepy thing where I gotta be like, here's, you gotta put this on. I know it sounds stupid. You know, I don't want to have to like be that guy. So it's a little easier for me. So what do I care?
All right. Well, let's talk about, Jay, why did you create this comic book? Because, you know, we're going to be honest here. It's an unusual tale. It's an unusual setting. How? Why? Tell us.
So I've been collecting comic books since I was 9 years old. And I think that anyone who's been collecting comics always wanted to try their hand at writing one or creating one. And so that's always been in the back of my mind. And then I had daughters. I have two lovely girls. And one of the things that you get to do as a parent is you get to introduce them to things you love, comic books, movies, novels, those kind of things. But in turn, they reintroduce them to you. And sometimes they're not as gender equitable as you'd like. Sometimes they're not, they're a little homogenized as far as their casting. So I wanted to create something for them so they could see themselves. So I wanted to create a strong character who happens to be female, happens to be Asian. And so when they come with me to a comic book store or bookstore, they get to see someone who looks like them on the shelves. And what's really important, that it's one of my main goals in creating this. And I'm so happy that I met someone like Dylan, who's really got those models and created the artwork that really enhances that just idea of just inclusion.
Mm-hmm. But I didn't really think of it as inclusive. Usually I would just think of it as Jay would write down, go find this character, and then I would just find the character. You know what I mean? So it was actually, I never really thought of it as that being that forward thinking while we were doing it. And then at the end of it, when people said stuff, I was like, oh yeah, I guess we did. I didn't really think about it that way. So that was, it was much more deliberate on Jay's part, and I didn't really think anything of it. Which I don't know if it's better or worse. I just said I'm much more pragmatic about it.
Okay.
Well, I think this was kind of nice is you tell me that people come up to you and you're like, they're like, oh, I have a great idea for a comic book. And you're like, well, give all me a time. Script, you know? And they're like, oh, I haven't written it down yet.
And they want me to like just draw it.
Yeah.
And then what we're going to do is then we're going to take it to the publisher and then you'll get, I'm like, no. Like, it's a lot of work, man. Well, I need something to kind of stipend me along because it's so time consuming. I couldn't, you know what I mean? I have to have something, or even if I don't make a lot of money off of it, I have to have almost like a placeholder amount of money to get it done. Cause I mean, we actually, I checked and we actually produced this pretty quickly for the size and operation that we have. But if I wasn't in, if I hadn't been doing like storyboards and stuff like that, I probably wouldn't be as quick as I am now. Cause that you have to really be fast. Like I do like 30, I have to do 30 illustrations a day when I'm doing that. So like, the comic book's more like kind of relaxing. I'm more, the fight with that more is to try to figure out where me and Jay meet in the middle is that is more the challenging part, but it's not really like a pain in the ass or anything.
And I think it's easier because we know a lot of creators, especially in the Cincinnati comic book scene, where they are the writer and the illustrator and they're doing their own work. But what's nice is I take the time to think through a script. And then when Dylan gets it, he does the script. There's like, I leave him alone and he might have a question or two, but he gets to digest that. He doesn't have to double think it. He can just, you know, do the script.
And I don't really come up with stuff like that. So that's pretty, I mean, I think you're a lot better at thinking of that kind of thing. I don't know. I would never have come up with Mast All on my own. So it's definitely a meeting of the minds on that.
I was going to say, it's a perfect tandem for you two.
Yeah.
It sounds
like
it.
It's kind of like being a musician. I like it a lot better when I play with a group of people than if I hired people to just do what I wanted them to do. It's going to be more interesting, I think.
Well, let's talk about some of the other characters besides Lilliput. You have, of course, the very mysterious Fat Mucket. So, yes. Jay, you want to describe a little bit what that character is all about?
So we get to meet Fat Mucket. This is Lilliput's manager. Now, you've seen her writing. One of the things I like to do as a creator is let the artist create. So I don't have a lot of word balloons. I don't have a lot of long monologues that take up more than the art on the page. And so and let Dylan's artwork tell the story. But admittedly, there's a lot of background info or just little nuances I'd love to share. And so it's a great tool to convey, to have a report, a post-action report that is done by in Fat Mucket's voice. And Fat Mucket, Lilliput, all these names, they're nicknames. They are named after freshwater mussels. So it's got that, I saw this one time I was at the museum center and they had this board and it had all these different freshwater mussels and they had all these great names like Fawn's Foot, Kidney Shell, Fat Mucket and Lilliput. And I was like, oh, I got it. So I started taking pictures and writing down the names and everything. Cause I just thought it was a very unique way where you have freshwater mussels who are filter feeders and you have these workers who are trying to clean the water. I think there's a nice little symmetry to that.
And you know what? I'm going to again tell the listeners that with season one and season two of Mast, I thought that the operations report was a fantastic way to capsulize everything, summarize everything, and still, you know, maintain the vision that you had for it, Jay, which was not a lot of word balloons. I thought that was so unique. And I know we talked about that in April. So that was that's some good stuff.
And when Jay told me about that, I said, whoever you want to model for the part of Fat Mucket, you have to tell them that you're the one that came up with the name Fat Mucket. I was like, I'm not walking over to that lady and say, I have a part that would be perfect for you. Fat Mucket. No. I was like, that's all on Jay for that one.
So in the Comic-Con circuit, there is a
cosplay.
In cosplay, yeah, it's Aisha Little, and she's amazing, and she was the character model for Fat Mucket.
She did a great job. It was so fun. That was a really good shoot.
They do. She is one of the members of Airship Ashanti, and they're like a steampunk cosplaying group in Cincinnati, and they go around to different Comic Cons in the region and stuff, and they're amazing.
That was really fun. Yeah, I thought also. A lot of times when the models come over, you know, they think it's going to be really grueling and daunting, but I usually have the entire comic book laid out as stick figures. So I can be like, okay, stand, sit. All right. Now lay down over here. Now go over there. It usually takes like 20 minutes. It doesn't take hardly any time. And so it shaves hours off of my time to be able to have that reference. So, and I even have like the little costume or like I'll build little like, you know, styrofoam tools for them and stuff like that. So it's pretty fun.
Cool. Let's talk about, of course, Lilliput's sidekick, Akka, correct?
Yeah.
Akka. Okay. Tell us a little bit about that. Nice. Oh, wait. Dylan already has.
I have one of them.
He's showing us a prop, ladies and gentlemen. I know
that's we always have this podcast at the table. And I did not like drawing it at first because it's just like it's a whole thing, other thing that you'd have to draw. So it was funny. But then my daughter was like, I love that little rat. And I was like, a two brute. I was like, really? And then she'd like, everybody loves it. And then kids would come up and they'd say, how much for these rats? And it was funny because the girl who was working the booth with me was like, oh, those aren't for sale. I was like, hold on. I'm sure Jay would be fine. I would go to another dollar store and get another plastic rat. I was like, yeah, $40. Let's do it.
Every Halloween, I'm going to all the dollar stores and I take the whole box of rats.
I always get the day after Halloween. Is the perfect day to go to Michael's if you want to get anything like kind of creepy like that. The day after is always great.
You go to the dollar store the day after Halloween and it's Christmas. I mean, the rats are gone. I had to ask. I was like, do you have any more of those?
Oh,
rats
really?
In the back? Yeah.
I'm more of a Michael's guy. I'm rich though, so yeah.
Yes, you do have more money than I do. So with Akka, Akka is Lilliput's partner in slime and a companion in the tunnels, because the tunnels can be kind of isolating because you got no cell phone reception. You're not checking your phone. You're not getting any texts and you're by yourself. You're kind of like a sheriff on the range. You have this territory that you have to take care of. Mm-hmm. And Akka provides that company. Also, admittedly, as a writer, Akka is a great tool for just the narration. Sometimes Lilliput's going to speak out loud and explain something to Akka for the reader.
She's kind of like an aside, you know what I mean?
But yeah, it's just so lonely down there. So to have a companion like that, I think, is just really essential to keep mm-hmm. just your sanity.
Let's talk about the Quasi as well. They're kind of the antagonist, if you will, of Lilliput.
Quasi's like the main filament. Like, so that's the leader of what we call them, like filaments. And they almost kind of look like spaghetti. It's like some bacteria that's become sentient, I think would be the word. And those are really hard to draw, I'll be honest. And then me and Jay got like it was funny. We were exactly the same on it when they were in water below, but once they came up, I saw them as having very pointy feet, like real sharp, like kind of like mm-hmm. stabby. And Jay wanted more thick trunk like feet. And I mean, I relented to Jay's vision, but I still have the versions with my more cool sharp feet. But I mean, it doesn't
tell him the shortcut. Tell him the shortcut. What is the model for the filaments? What do you use?
Oh, I use pipe cleaners that are wrapped up around like that look like weird kind of like Blair Witch style dolls. But I just take pipe cleaners and make little like humanoid kind of beings out of it. That way I can take photos of it, and that because it's kind of hard to draw some of the stuff when it's in perspective and stuff like that. So I just try to make sure I can kind of draw it, and it helps it a little bit. And it looks weird when people come into my room. I was like, oh, it's just something I'm working on. So it's pretty fun. Yeah, and then I have
voodoo dolls.
And I make sure that they're different colors so I can kind of keep track of which one is which. And a lot goes into these things.
Do you give them names?
Kinda. Yeah. And then Jay has one. Quasi's the main one. I was like, how do I draw one to make it look different than the other? And so Quasi always has like a rip in the chest and like a scar on the face. So it's about as different as I can make it. So, I mean.
So Quasi first appeared in the first season. I think the third episode, Scrape. And Lilliput kind of bisected him through the chest with a shovel. And so he didn't heal right. He was always pretty nasty, but that did not help his disposition. And he's been kind of like, Fat Muckett kind of described him in one of the Fat Muckett files as the upper management that they're looking to eliminate. And so Quasi's kind of leads the filaments, and he's kind of got a nasty disposition about anything non-filament. So he hurts Sandshell in episode 5, Lucky, and in season 2 he leads the hunt for Lilliput after Lilliput gets the mother, the filament mother, and then he is instrumental in leading the filaments to invade the treatment plant in season 3.
Well, let's talk about one more character, Nymph.
Oh yeah,
the giant cockroach.
Yes, exactly, giant mutant cockroach. So, by the way, I actually had giant mutant cockroach on my 2020 bingo card. I thought that would be what would be next. I'm somewhat disappointed. I mean, I know there's still a couple of days left, but you know,
it could still happen.
I hope you lose in this bingo. I don't want. Yeah. So with all the chemical dumping, pharmaceuticals in the sewage, I think in Seattle, they talked about how, because there's so many coffee shops, there's even the sewage is highly caffeinated as well. We also have other elements in Mist, like a dimensional rift on the 74th level. So there's all sorts of just things brewing in the slow cooker of sewage pipes. And so, yeah, the cockroaches get mutated, and we got Nymph. She's a 4-foot cockroach. She's telekinetic and can create a kind of a muck golem around her. And her and Lilliput are friends, and they go out to lunch, and they chat, and they go to that the Alley Croc graveyard fungus forest together. And it's great because I think that Lilliput has, instead of fighting her surroundings, she's in tune with them, and she's made friends and made connections and companions with the homeless population, with the mutated cockroaches, you know, I mean, with the Alley Crocs for the most part. You'll see that. And one of her best friends is Nymph.
I was hoping we could kill Nymph off because she's hard to draw.
Season 4. No, I don't know yet.
Well, you know what? Let's talk about season 3. Season 3 came out on December 9th. It is called Boots On. Yeah. And you've kind of alluded to a little bit, guys, as to what might be happening in season 3. So what can folks expect if they pick up the book?
I would say the artwork is definitely a lot more streamlined, because I did it all at one time this time, instead of, like, you know, we do one thing, then we do the next. So it definitely is more homogenous. So the style, and in this one, because I had a little bit extra time, I hand colored it in. So I just used ink and like watercolor, and then scanned everything in and then kind of assembled it in the computer. So I did a lot more hand drawing, and I think it gives it a different look. Just because since it was above ground, a lot of it's, I wanted to kind of have a different look. And then when they go outside, then it has a different look for that too. I just wanted to try to kind of keep it, you know, interesting for everybody. And I'd say this one's got a lot of action in it, and you get to meet a lot more of Lilliput's coworkers. And I think it expands the universe a lot. It's kind of like we finally got off of Tatooine, and now we get to see the whole, you know, the galaxy. If this was Star Wars, this would definitely be our, you know, Empire Strikes Back.
No, you're stealing my metaphors. I was going to say, like, it's we have above ground Lord of the Rings size battles with sewer workers versus filaments. Come on.
I was doing a different brand of nerdy thing. I was going Star Wars. I thought also, man, Lord of the Rings is just so many people. It's just too much to keep track of.
I won't do that many people. I swear.
I've watched the entire thing of Lord of the Rings again, and I'm still like, now who is that? Like, I'm still like, don't really understand. I was like, how many times we're gonna have to watch this whole thing before I'm like, so Sauron is a different thing, you know? It's a whole thing. But yeah, I definitely think this is my favorite one so far, just because it's had a lot more challenges and it's a lot more people, and most of it Lilliput's bedridden, So I didn't have to draw that rat that much. So that was kind of interesting. It's all about being lazy for me. And then, but it was definitely, it was intense because this time we had like 9 other people in it. So the, it was like so much drawing and getting people together.
And you got over a dozen.
Wow. That's crazy. Yeah. So that's pretty cool to come up with that many characters and draw and keep kind of keep track of it. It was pretty fun, but it was a lot of, it was a lot of work.
Jay, what do you think about season 3? What's
I would say it's we got everything from it's like a midnight heist. It's a thrilling confrontation with the creatures of the roots. I mean, we get a little bit more widescreen, like cinematic action. There's a double page spread that Dylan created when the filaments and the sewer workers and mechanical workers are battling. And it's just gorgeous. And but also you get the nuances. You get to meet Fat Mucket and you get to see the admin office and the treatment labs and the medical wing where even though Lilliput is bedridden, she definitely has a key moment, a couple key moments in the third season as well.
Cool.
Yeah.
You also have some help, so to speak, if you want to call it that, with season 3. David Mack did a cover for you.
So, that's right.
Yeah. Tell the listeners, how did David Mack get involved in the project?
So David Mack went to Northern Kentucky University. He created his own major. Dylan, you remember the warehouse, that dance club?
Yep.
He was telling me how he used to like try and sell kabuki at the warehouse, trying to sell comics in a dance club, which I was like, you can't hear anything in this dance club. How did you sell comic books? I don't know. But like, he still comes into town like maybe once every couple of months and we hang out and everything like that. And I asked him, this was kind of my birthday, 2 birthdays, 2 Father's Day and 2 Christmases worth of gifts. And I asked him to do a commission. So he has the inside cover for Mess Comics, which is absolutely gorgeous if you get a chance to see it. It's on our blog. You can see his process photos and you can see the end results.
So you've known David for a while?
I interviewed him probably about 10, maybe 15 years ago for the library. And then we've been staying loosely connected ever since.
Okay.
And we get together and he participated in the May the 4th art show. And he's just really supportive. He does free comic book day at Comic Book World in Kentucky, in Florence, Kentucky. He's usually a regular fixture there. And we got reconnected and we've been hanging out ever since.
Okay. There you go. I'm going to interrupt my conversation with Jay and Dylan for just one moment to talk to you about World's Greatest Comics. It's the one-stop shop for all of your comic book-related needs. They've got single issues, collections, graphic novels, toys, collectibles, posters, back issues, and a great pull system. So if you're afraid you're going to miss a single issue of your favorite comic, all you got to do is sign up for the pull system, and when that book comes in, they'll pull it, hold it for you at the register until you stop by and pick it up. You can check them out online. They're over at wgcomics.com, or if you're in the Central Ohio area, stop by the store. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio, and they're even on Facebook. Just look for at WG Comics. And no matter how you interact with them, whether in person or online, let them know that you heard about the store from me, John Orlando, right here on the PVD Cast. Dylan, I just want to go back to you for a minute and ask, who are your inspirations?
Well, for comic books, I was really into R. Crumb when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. Probably not very appropriate for children, but that's what we had. My parents were like kind of hippies, so we had that. And I used to look at that Big Brother and the Holding Company album cover a lot. So I really like that kind of black and white stuff like that. And then I like Frank Miller a lot because I loved the Ronin comic book and like the Wolverine series that he had done. So those two were my two big comic book guys. And then like Bernie Wrightson. So it's weird that it's just the people who have like the more limited palette have always kind of appealed to me as far as that goes. And then for just general like art, I was always into like, you know, Andy Warhol. I really liked his look, you know, the starkness of his look. But then I like the old masters too, like the Genaleski and stuff like that. So I definitely like things that are more storytelling almost like illustration. Like when I was in college, I was like, so illustration's different? Like I didn't ever, because to me, just a painting's a painting. And, you know, but when I started realizing that illustration was more like you're telling a story mm-hmm. with the, you know, or it's just like a scene from a movie. I mean, that's what I tend to gravitate more to. And so when I was into photography, I saw that guy, Gregory Crudson, and his paint, his photographs look like a scene out of a movie, you know, and it, I like that. That is like kind of a, you could tell they're real set up as he's not like a photojournalist. He's almost like putting on a, like a single shot play or something. And that's what I gravitate towards anyway. So I realized early on that most of my favorite artists were considered illustrators. So that's, I really like, you know, like Norman Rockwell. I really love that stuff. That kind of old stuff like that is really, you know, interesting. And people who would do children's books and that kind of thing. I like to look at the pictures and see the stories and then like pinup artwork. And I love like old pulp novel covers. That's a major influence on me. That's just like the, ooh, what's going to happen? You know, and it's like usually a really incredible, because I used to find them at the secondhand store when I was a kid, and then you'd read the story. I was like, this is terrible. But like the painting was always so great, you know, or like the Frank Frazetta is probably my all time favorite, just because, I mean, I used to have his posters in my room, and, you know, it's always like, what was happening? What is this? And, you know, I like that you know, he kind of showed you one scene and then you made up a whole movie in your head about what was going on. And like, there's that picture of like one warrior fighting these two like warriors on the top of a, you know, a mountain. And then you're like, why are they wearing loincloths if it's, there's snow out? What is this fight about? I don't know. Like, it's weird. Like, I like that kind of like, I don't know. It just doesn't seem like they're dressed appropriate for the weather.
I actually have we're going to deviate for a minute. I have a Frazetta story for you, Dylan. I think it's pretty much well known that his kids, you know, still go to comic cons and still sell his art.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so his booth was right next to Jim Steranko's at Pittsburgh Comic Con.
Yeah.
So I'm standing in line because Jim was at a panel, and I'm waiting patiently to get some artwork done. And the kids, the Frazetta kids, are just telling stories about Frank going to the Playboy Mansion and hanging out and meeting this girl and that girl and heffing him. And I'm like, wait, time out. Wait, Frank was at the, that just doesn't seem right. That just doesn't seem like he would be the type of dude to be like chilling with you heffing. But yeah.
So. I mean, so did Salvador Dali. Salvador Dali loved it. I mean, that's so hilarious to me. Yeah, that's weird. Anybody,
it is.
They could get anybody one of those Playboy. That's why they would get such good writers. They'd be like, hey, can you write an article for us? And the writer's probably like, yeah, if I get invited to that dope party. I mean, you know.
Shel Silverstein. I mean, like.
That's right. He used to clean up at those parties. I was like, there's that. Yeah. I mean, I would build a grotto too if I didn't think it would just be me in there by myself floating around. Just, yeah, I'll be in the grotto by myself again. You know, that's what it would be like in my house. I would never be like, we'll make a waterfall so nobody can find me.
There's a home improvement idea for you folks.
That's
there you
right.
go. Yeah. Right from Dylan.
Build your own grotto.
Go to grotto. Yeah. All right, Jay, I know that when we talked in April, you had talked about what you kind of learned from doing this project, because you visited one of the sewer districts there in Cincinnati, and you kind of got the inside scoop of what went on. So can you refresh my memory and let the listeners know kind of what you learned from that trip?
So basically, going back to like 2015, 2016, I took about a year and a half, 2 years of just to do research on the comic book, because I didn't have very much idea about this essential system that we depend upon every day. I didn't know very much about. So I did tours at Cincinnati's Metropolitan Sewer District. I for Northern Kentucky University or Northern Kentucky, they have SD1, Sanitation District 1. And I did a ride along with their trouble call crew. I've been into different sewers. I've seen how they clean out the pipes and everything like that. I've seen how they do the treatments. But more importantly, just talking and interviewing the workers, they do their job. They do it well. They do it without applause. They do it without complaint. And we don't really care unless our basement floods with sewage, you know, or we don't really care unless the system's broken. But they work constantly and for very little appreciation. And I think that's one of the main things is it's very much like a, when I compare Lilliput, the character, it's like a little bit like Hellboy, where it's like Hellboy's just doing his job. He wants to get through the end of the day. He does his job. He does it well. And then he just wants a beer or smoke afterwards, you know, that kind of thing. And I think that's what the people who do this essential work really just want is to get through it, do it well, and, you know, just relax.
Mm-hmm. Dylan, did you get to take any field trips in the sewer?
Nope. Not involved. No, I'm just kidding. I did get to go to that one time when we did a photo shoot at City Beat. But Jay's a lot better of a person than me, so he's really taken the time to learn about these people's problems and all this and get involved. And he had like an educational part for the children. And I'm just like, let's try to make this thing sexier. I definitely did learn a lot. I just realized it actually wasn't as dirty of a job as I thought that it was going to be, because I was like, oh, they got that kind of figured out. So, you know, like in my mind, I was like, it'd just be me wading through human waste with a rake and maybe a plunger and being like, I don't know what we're going to do with all this poop. But they've, after hundreds of years, have it a lot more figured out than I have it at this, you know, at this point, at this juncture. So I here's what I learned. Through this whole thing, I learned that I thought I was kind of like into comic books until I started going to comic cons. And then I was like, oh, I don't know anything about comic books. It was like, I told someone, one time I told Jay and somebody else, I was like, I mean, I know a lot about comic books. I don't know like the really minute stuff, like what is Hawkman's alias? And everybody said Nathaniel Hawthorne, was that what it was?
Or no, like Carter Hall.
See, I still don't know. You guys knew his alias. I almost fell on the floor. I was like, I would have thought his name was Dr. Hawk.
Yes, which yes, is yes.
A terrible
Hawkman, aka Dr. Hawk. Yeah, that's what, because no one could figure out that secret identity.
Well, I mean, it was just weird that everybody knew that. Everybody yeah. knew that. I was like, I'd never even heard. I have no idea. I know he could fly, and that's it. Like, I don't know anything about it. So I really was kind of blown away at the depth that people had. They're like, oh, what comic book do you like? And I was like, I like Thor a lot. And they're like, which era? I was like, I just like the hammer, dude. I don't know. I like a hat. I was like, I hadn't really thought it that deep into it. So that was kind of interesting for me. I was like, oh God, I like other stuff, you know, like, so
I'm enough of a comic book nerd for the both of us. So yeah.
Okay.
So and that's why I'm like nerdy about other stuff. So, I mean, you know, I mean, it's, I've got like, I have a thing that I'm interested in that I think other people aren't, but I just, it's not comic books. I just like art and drawing, but even when I was a kid and I had comic books, I just looked at the pictures. I don't, my reading comprehension isn't that good.
So Dylan, what are you into? You just teased
I like into bit. Art, but I like music and stuff like okay. that. So like if somebody says, oh, this album, this was, oh, I like that old Motown sound. I'd be like, oh, Aretha Franklin's actually on Atlantic Records and it was produced by this person. Like, I'm like more of like a music nerd where I like, no, okay. Like I watched every documentary. I watched a 4-hour documentary on the Grateful Dead. And my wife was like, I didn't think you liked the Grateful Dead. I was like, not really. But I still watched it. It was still interesting to me. Now I can pinpoint what it is about them I don't love. More accurate. I wouldn't say I dislike. I wouldn't boo them off the stage. But if I saw them playing in a bar, I wouldn't say, let's get in a van and see these guys every single day. That would never have. That would
you're
never.
Not, you're not
me.
A deadhead. You're not a deadhead.
No, but I wouldn't. Yeah, I just don't hate it. I don't understand the love. That's what I don't like. I don't hate it, but I don't. It doesn't say anything that would evoke any sort of like why I would like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like when I first heard dubstep, I could get why the kids would like, I was like, I get it. If I was like 12 or something, I was like, hey, old man with your guitars, we got a new thing. It comes from the computer and it sounds like a fax machine calling the jukebox. But I mean, I get that. I get why that's popular, but I don't understand the Grateful Dead. I don't know what it brings to the table.
What I like about Dylan is he, like me, he's able to connect the dots. So the work he does for Mess really feeds and helps him with the storyboarding.
Yeah,
or his love of music and like, you know, cover art is influenced by like, because a lot of our, I would say like a good half of our cover art look like rock and roll posters. Honestly, I feel like he's really channeled into that. And,
well, it's like one of my side gigs is I do rock band posters. So that's,
and yeah, you are I play in a band.
I play music too, so I'm into that.
He's in a band called Heavy Hinges.
That's and true.
Here's how we all connect the dots. He's been playing with animation, so he created an animated video using Messed artwork and Lily Put to a song by Heavy Hinges, Miss Wright.
That's right.
That's on our website if you get a chance to check it out. And it's really great because there's no army of Asian animators behind him. It's just Dylan. Yeah. But it's also Dylan's music working with the band Heavy Hinges. I mean, so it's just, I love how we can use these things as not siloed skills, but really just put it all together and be strong with all our skills and everything we're interested in.
We've also won a lot. I did a animation this year for about a guy who meets Prince, and now we got best animated short in like the Toronto Black Film Festival, and a bunch of other awards where I was like, wow, I didn't even know. So that was pretty cool. So I started doing animation, but it's funny, I use the same technique that Jay and I use to do the animation where I say, this is what the frame is going to look like, and I'm going to draw it like this. And it's It actually, working with Jay has helped me with that because our workflow, because we kind of have to figure out like, how are we going to do this? So I just do everything stick figure before I commit any time to something now. So that way I don't go hard on something and then you back it out. But
yeah, I can't tell you how many creators we know that they get stuck on a certain sequence or a certain page,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to thumbnailing it like Dylan does. So he thumbnails it. I send him scripts. We talk a little bit. He thumbnails it. He shows me the thumbnails and we go back and forth. And sometimes I will say, oh, it's really important we highlight this, and that's not in the script, but because I didn't see it, but because his thumbnails are so detailed, I can be like, oh, okay. And then he'll start working with the character models or sketching based off of that. But we know a lot of creators who sometimes they don't thumbnail, they focus on one page.
You'll never do it that way too. It's hard.
It's just a long process. I mean, my God.
Well, I think because then it seems more daunting, but if you draw the entire thing in stick figures, then when you look back at it, you're like, well, I already did it once. Now I just need to do it a little more fancy, you know? So I think it makes it not seem so overwhelming when you can start. I always say start big, like do the whole thing, then kind of fine tune it. Don't just start like, you know, it's kind of like if I draw a face, I don't just start on the eye real hard and then work my way out. I kind of draw kind of sketch in the whole face first, you know.
Yeah.
I feel like it's a really rough way to do it. I mean, you can do it that way, but you're never going to make any money. You're too slow. That's all I care about. I was like, how can I do
it's always about the deadline, you know, and setting yourself up. Mm-hmm. To, I mean, maybe it's not your best work, but you did the deadline.
You
can improve upon it after that. But
yeah. And I talk to other artists all the time where I'm just like, dude, you're just going to have to be faster. Because I have some friends who they work really slow, and now they're beholden to like four really big ticket investors who buy their work. But I can just make, I mean, you could work at a gas station and buy my artwork. So I'm like, I'm not really as beholden to like, I don't have to really kiss it. I'm like, if you want it, I don't know, just tell me, because I don't have to spend that long on it. If I had, I was like, I knew a guy who spent a month on a painting. I was like, that's craziness to me. I mean, I guess, but if he's getting paid $20,000 for it, I get it. I can't kiss that kind of, I can't do that. I don't, that's not my thing. I was like, I'm like, somebody asked Roger, John Waters if he, what he would do if he got the budget to make a really big Hollywood movie. He said, I would just make 20 really cheap movies. Like, that's how I would be. I was like, I don't got time for all that.
All right, well, guys, as we're getting up there close to our time limit, I'm going to let you get a chance to talk about website and all that other stuff. But, Jay, you wanted to mention the Cincinnati Cabinet of Curiosities. So tell the folks what that project is all about, please.
So the Cincinnati Cabinet of Curiosities, we just did a very successful Kickstarter, and comics are out there now and are available. If you go to Cincy Cabinet of Curiosities on Facebook or Instagram, you'll see pages and how to order and everything. Basically, it's kind of the Cincinnati scene, the regional scene, and all these creators are getting together. We got Christina Wald, Tim Fuller, Kat Klocko, Rodney Fike, and they're doing stories about hauntings, cryptids, urban legends around the Cincinnati area. Now, I was part of the Cincinnati Comic Creators. We meet monthly, and that's where this group branched off of. And they created the Cincinnati Cabinet of Curiosities. We were going through different stories, different legends, and the idea of mermaids of the Ohio River came up. And I was like, mermaids of the what? And so I raised my hand. I was like, I'll take that one. Talked to Dylan, and instead of using models for this piece, Dylan, this is full sketch, full illustration, correct?
Yeah. I mean, I have like little like...
little references.
But I have like little, yeah, I use those little like, you know, posable figures still, but, you know, just so I get the you know, proportions right. But yeah, that one, well, this one was totally different.
You channel Mike Mignola like Hellboy style, where it's predominantly a black page and you put white on top, correct?
Yeah, and I wanted to kind of almost look like scratchboard. Yeah. And I felt like I was ripping off Bernie Wrightson pretty hard on this, especially his Frankenstein. But I mean, not maybe ripping off, but that was what I was going for. And I liked it to be at night and kind of creepy. And I went pretty hard on that. I was really excited to just do a different comic book. And I'm really proud of what we did together. I thought ours was definitely a little bit more like serious, and it was nothing. It was funny because you'd think, oh, mermaids of the Ohio River. And I was like, this is terrifying. It's like scary and violent. I love it.
So it takes place in the 1800s. And one of the things I combined are the historic elements of Cincinnati being part of the Underground Railroad. Mm-hmm. And so it has fleeing slaves who are crossing the Ohio River. And how do the mermaids of the Ohio fit into that story? It was a story in 1894. It was in the Inquirer, for Pete's sake. And what they were talking about was these creatures that they could see from afar on the shore, just frolicking on the shore. And they didn't look humid, or they didn't look human. And they looked like fish, but humanoid shape. And it's just the way they describe them. And that's the only real piece of the Mermaids of the Ohio. And it's published. It was like two paragraphs. But I was able to take that and turn it into a story. And then Dylan just really brought it to life. And we married it again to the idea of the Underground Railroad and everything like that. And I think we turned in a pretty, pretty stark and scary story.
Where can folks find that if they're interested?
So I would hit the Facebook page. I think you can order the comic. It's at Cincy, Cincy, Cabinet of Curiosities. Or just Google it. We have a Facebook presence and Instagram. And it's a real, and it's a mix because people love their ghost stories and their urban myths and their creature stories. But it's a real nice section of the Cincinnati comic book scene. Mm-hmm. And yeah, really focuses on those creators.
That was a fun one to work on. And I feel like because we started working on it right when COVID hit, this one is out of control good because I had literally nothing going on. You could tell. Well, I was just locked in a room for like weeks
Oh, yeah. Well, you did the thumbnails for all of season three. And then I was like, hey, do you have a little extra time? There's another project we could do together.
I was like, I literally have nothing going on.
COVID time.
All right. Well, gentlemen, let's start wrapping things up with website, social media. Do you have any upcoming appearances where folks can get messed and all that stuff?
So if they go to messedcomics.com, M-E-S-S-E-D comics.com, they can order the digital version of season three. And also we've got free digital comics there as well for season one and two. And then also on Webtoons, it's free as well, season one and two. Season three is out. People can order it digitally. And I'm already working on the scripts for season four.
Okay. All right. Dylan, where can folks find you on social media?
I'm just Dylan Spieg on, check me out on Instagram as like all my artwork's on.
Cool.
On Instagram. I don't have any pictures of my kids or nothing like that. Like, I don't care about any of that. I was like, just check my art out. Yeah. And you can,
and it's S-P-E-E-G.
Yeah. S-P-E-E-G. And that's my artwork right there.
Okay. JBN, what about you?
I'm all Mess Comics. That's all I work on. Night and day.
So you're on Facebook, Twitter, et cetera, et cetera. So
yeah, Mess Comics, at Mess Comics.
There you go.
I'm not on Twitter, but I don't feel bad about it.
You're on Twitter.
I was, but then I was like, I don't care. I don't have anything to say. I don't want to be like, turkey burgers. Or I don't know. I don't have anything like that.
Turkey burgers.
I always see stuff like that where I'm like, why are you telling us that? Or I like when two people who live together wish each other happy Valentine's Day over Facebook. I was like, it's weird that you didn't. It would have been so much better if you could have told them in person. Don't you think? That's so weird to me. Like, I can't imagine coming into my wife and saying, wait till you go online and see what I wrote to you on Facebook. I know I'm standing here in the flesh, but I wanted everyone else to know. Like, that's so weird to me. Like, that would never occur to me. Oh, what emoji goes with that? I always just assume everybody thought I love my wife. Like, I don't know why I tried to tell him. Hey, did you hear that he loves his wife? Look at that. That's so weird.
Dude, and you love your memes. Come on.
You know, I'm very anti-meme. It's like cover thoughts.
You tell people how anti-meme you are with memes. So, yeah, you know, that's true. Come on.
It's because I only support original memes. If you create it, it's like your own joke.
That's very meta of you.
Oh, I do. Yes. Meta. I made one that was like all memes are bastards with all these memes with a big circle around it, and then made a meme about it. I hate it. Because they're so smug. They're usually not funny. They're usually hurtful to somebody. And I was like, stop it. Willy Wonka wouldn't say something that mean-spirited.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, on that note, Dylan. Right,
well, thanks a lot. Ray,
thank you very, very much for coming
thank
on.
You. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'll be back here in just a moment to wrap up the episodes of Don't Go Anywhere. Well, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. My conversation with Jay and Dylan talking about Messed. And definitely go over to Messed Comics, M-E-S-S-E-D, comics.com. Check out the first two editions. Check out the brand new, the third edition that just came out a few weeks ago. And I appreciate both Jay and Dylan coming on and chatting about Messed and the creative process and everything that goes into making a great independent comic. But I think it's time for me to let you know where you can get in touch with me if you would choose to do so. You could shoot me an email if that's how you roll. JohnOrlando@pvdcast.com is my email address. You can find me on Twitter. My personal handle is @pvdmvp. You can even leave me a message through the Facebook page and the IG feed. It's @pvdcast. And if you need to let some folks know about where they can get this podcast, well, it's pretty much available anywhere, but probably the best place to start is my own website, pvdcast.com. but it's also available through all those major outlets such as Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Stitcher Radio, Google Podcasts, etc., etc. Just go to the search bar, put in PVDcast. Sometimes you have to put my name after it, and you should be able to find it. And I'd also like to let you know that every Monday night at 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, I do a live broadcast of the episode that is playing for the week. So tune in over at PVDcast on Facebook and join the party. I'm there chatting with folks as they watch and they listen, and it's a great time, so you got to check it out. And also, folks, I need to let you know that if you listen to an episode of the PVDcast, please rate, review, and subscribe. If you rate and review, that helps me out in the algorithm. And if you subscribe, then you guarantee that you're never going to miss an episode. And I'm going to throw a fourth one in there. Just spur of the moment, I'm going to throw a fourth one in there. Tell some folks about the PVDcast. I would greatly, greatly appreciate that. All right, with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get on out of here. So I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous. Stay independent. Stay safe and healthy. Production of John Orlando Enterprises, LLC, copyright 2020.